of the way and bring up our special guest trainer for the next couple of hours. I got a chance to get to know Mr. Roberson really for the first time a little over a year ago in Oklahoma City. One of my great friends in the world of Legal Shield, many of you know Mr. Harold Branch down in Arizona. HB? Yep, HB. Well, HB hails from Chicago. Him and Mr. Roberson are brothers from another mother. Great friends, you know, and it was awesome to be able to, you know, get to know Mr. Roberson a little bit. And when I heard when he was coming to Utah, I was flat out excited because I know what HB has brought when he's come to Utah, and I knew Mr. Roberson was going to bring some amazing content as well. And I love Mel Roberson's story, and I'm sure he's going to tell some of that, but he's been part-time in Legal Shield since he started. He's never been a full-time associate. He uses his Legal Shield income to be able to pursue his passions in life and the things that he really wants to do. And I'm excited to hear his story and what he has to share with us today. So if you wouldn't mind getting on your feet, making some big noise for Mr. Mel Roberson.
Hey, let that play. Let that play. Turn it up. As a matter of fact, start the song from the beginning, can't you? Listen to the words of this song. Am I wrong for thinking out the box from where I stay? Am I wrong to think that I choose another way? I ain't trying to do what everybody else doing. Just because everybody doing what they all do. One thing I know, I fall but I grow. I'm walking down this road of mine, this road that I call home. I love this song. Let it play. Are y'all listening? Am I tripping for having a vision? My prediction, I will be on top of the world. We just made it out. You can cut it, Doug. Or Jay, whoever's listening. So I'm a huge fan of personal development, not only in the form of reading and seminars and audios like that, but I think the music that we listen to also can have a positive or a negative effect on what it is that we do. I mean, I'm from Chicago, and I grew up in the inner city. I listened to a lot of rap music growing up, and some of the stuff that I used to listen to, even from like the 90s when I was in high school, if I put that on my workout list now and I'm listening to it, I'm like, this does not identify with what my core values are. And so it's a lot of music that I didn't even cut out. And it's so difficult because I'm a DJ. And being a DJ, like, I pay what they play me to pay. But sometimes I feel like I need to read, like, 32 books after I've DJed a party. It's just crazy. A couple of things before I get into my training that I want to talk to you about. Your next Super Saturday features a gentleman who is a very, 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 very good friend of mine. Mr. Steve Hoisington is coming next month. Steve is a gentle giant, is what I call him. He is one of the people that I've learned so much from, not just in casual conversation, but his trainings. He's so down to earth, like, if you just met him on the streets, he has a glow about him where you'd be like, he's a great guy. But, like, I had no idea that he had accomplished everything that he had accomplished in Legal Shield until, you know, I see him walking across stage and earning all of these different positions. Amazing gentleman. His brother, T.J. Hoisington, is a best-selling author as well. So he's been around so much personal development, Steve has, that what he brings to the table is so incredible. You would be doing yourself and your family for generations to come a disservice if you are not here to see Steve Hoisington next month. Like, he's that good. Like, I've been trying to get him in Chicago for a year and a half, and I haven't been able to coordinate schedules with him to get him to Chicago. Steve is a beast, and he's going to do a phenomenal job next month. So you always want to make sure that you participate in that. With something else that I wanted to tell you guys. Oh, so Mike, he's telling a story about how I ran into him. And that's actually, I came down on his ankle. He makes it seem like I just ran into a brick wall. I came down. You don't just run into something and get hurt. You have to like come down on something. So I actually came down on his and landed on him, and that's how I got hurt. But it was only after I had dunked on him twice previous to that, and then that's when he decided to jump in the lane. See, he didn't tell that part of the story. And so the third time is when he decided to jump in the lane, right? And that's how I got injured. So, you know, but we've all agreed not to publicize the footage from yesterday. Yeah. Why didn't you tell him I dunked on you twice before I got injured, though? And tell that part of the story. Oh, man. It was definitely worth it. So part of my story is I played semi-professional basketball in Canada in a tournament in, was it 2000, 2001? So I played semi-pro ball over there, and I had a great time there. So, you know, I do play a little ball every now and then. I'm not as agile as I used to be, but I can still do, you know. I mean, you guys know about basketball. The Bulls used to whoop the Jazz all the time. You guys totally understand basketball. I'm a John Stockton fan. I just didn't like Karl Malone, but I love John Stockton. He was an amazing point guard, Okay, so I don't know what I'm going to talk about today. But when you have so much in you, it can't help but to come out of you. So I'm a bit of an energy reader. I do have a PowerPoint that I'm going to use to kind of guide me along the way, but I never let my topic get in the way of what I want to say. A couple of you caught that. I never let my topic get in the way of what I want to say. So during our conversation today, and this will be more of a lot of conversation. This won't just be me sitting here talking to you, because my goal is to give you something that helps you out in life and business. Okay, and a lot of times I tape part of the stuff, because what's interesting about being a speaker is sometimes I say stuff and I'm like, man, I wish I could write that down, but I can't because I'm on stage. So I don't get to, and that happens to me a lot, and so from time to time I tape myself so that I have the stuff to go back to later. Let me get in frame. Okay. So, the interesting thing about life is that we are the sum total of all of our choices. Where you are right now has everything to do with every choice that you have made since you've been able to make choices. Now, the great part in that is that you have the ability to change the choices that you make. So, if your life is not what you want it to be right now, it's a matter of you changing your choices, making different decisions, committing to different areas of your life that you want to improve, figuring out what that plan of action needs to be, and then working in that direction towards what it is that you want to do. Change your mind, you change your life. Right? So where do your choices come from, though? Your choices come from what your philosophies are, the things that you believe, the things that you have internalized, because nothing can come out of you unless it's in you. Right? It's theoretically impossible for something to come out of you unless it's in you. So what you put into yourself determines what comes out of yourself. So if you are not putting into you, into your mind, into your consciousness, into your subconscious, if you're not putting into those things the type of information, the type of positivity, the type of learning that is necessary for you to become successful, you'll never become successful. It's like exercise, right? Having a gym membership alone does not make you strong or healthy. Having a library card does not make you smart. Buying a bunch of books and having a library does not make you intelligent. What you do with those things determines what your life becomes. So it's one thing to say, well, somebody asked me, Mel, what's your top 5 books, your top 10 books? And I gave them a list. And I went back and I visited that marketplace a year later. And they asked me the same question. Mel, what's your top 5? It's like the question that that guy asks. Right? And a couple of people here have asked me that question. It's a great question. But it doesn't matter if I give you the answer to the question if you don't do anything with the answers. So a year later, I come back to the marketplace and I ask the guy, and he asks, well, what's your top 5 books? And I name the same top 5 that were my previous top 5. And he's like, oh, those sound like great books. And I'm like, yeah, they're the same 5 I gave you last year. But he hadn't read them. At one point in time, when I was on stage, we had a professional photographer. And when the pictures came back and I saw the pictures of me on stage at my heaviest, right? I've always been a lean guy, but I was about 213 pounds at that time. And let me tell you how I got to the point where I knew it was a problem. Well, let me finish that story and I'll go back. So it was about 213 pounds at that time, and I knew it was a problem because when I saw the pictures, I'm like, who is that chubby guy on stage with the tattoos that look just like mine? Right? And I knew I had to do something different. I had all of the knowledge. I knew that I should be eating better. I knew that I should be exercising. I knew that I needed a certain amount of cardio. I knew all of these things, but just knowing is not enough. Knowing without action is nothing. Okay? So one day, this is another chubby male story, I go to my closet. I have a bunch of suits that I had put in the cleaners, and I go to get dressed. I'm getting ready for an appointment, and I put on a suit, and I put the pants on, and I'm trying to fasten the pants, and I'm like, the cleaners shrunk my slacks. So I grab another suit, I rip the plastic off of it, and I put the jacket on, and I button my shirt, and I tuck the shirt in, and I'm trying to close it. And I was like, the cleaner shrunk this suit too. And so then I grabbed the suit that had not been in the cleaners yet, and I put that on, and I said, how did the cleaners shrink a suit that I didn't even put in there yet? But the cleaners hadn't shrank the suits. I grew, and not in a positive way. So it doesn't matter what you know unless you exercise what you know. Figuratively and literally. It doesn't matter what you know unless you exercise what you know. They say knowledge is power. That's inaccurate. Knowledge in action is power. If you know how to drive an Indy 500 car, and you have an Indy 500 car, but that Indy 500 car stays in your garage, that Indy 500 car is useless. You have the knowledge, you have the tool, but you don't do the proper activity. So without the proper activity, it doesn't matter what you know and what tools you have. It's about work. and work ethic. And if you don't put in the work and you don't have the proper work ethic, you're not going to get the results. The only place where success comes before work is in the dictionary. Let that sink in for a moment. S comes before W. You get that? Right? That's the only place where success comes before work. Any place else, you have to do something in order to get something. Earl Nightingale says in The Strangest Secret, he talks about the gentleman who sits in front of the fireplace and says, "Give me heat, then I'll give you wood." That's not how it works. Got to put something in to get something out. And the more you put in, the more you have a potential to get out. But the interesting part about personal development and about activity and about life is that generally you get back more than you put in. If you do it in the right spirit, with the right morals, with the right values. I'm a firm believer that God rewards me exceedingly and abundantly above and beyond what I do. Because I do it with the proper mindset. So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff today. I got a lot of time with you all. Actually, more time than I'm used to, right? 2 hours. This is like a movie. But I want it to be some conversation, though. I don't want it to be me sitting here talking to you for 2 hours and you just listening and taking notes. We're going to do some question and answer. We're going to talk about some stuff. Like I say, I don't know everything that I'm going to say yet, but I do know it's going to be good. Can guarantee you that. So let's talk about some stuff. I'm going to pause this for a minute. Okay. Well, you got one of my mafia pictures up there. I like that. I did a mob boss photo shoot back home. They had a mob boss photo shoot. And I'm in this pinstripe suit. You can't see it here. And I had like a glass of bourbon and a cigar in a lot of these pictures. It was a really fun photo shoot. All right. Let's talk about updating your software. Ooh, popcorn. I want some. Bring me some, please. Can I have some? Yes, sir. One of the great things about, like, becoming an executive and being part of the leadership team is, like, you get snacks in the front of the room. It's, like, crazy. Anybody else in here hungry? Anybody want some Starburst? No, like, I'm serious. You want Starburst? Here, pass them around. Have some Starburst, guys. Put some sugar in your system, it'll perk you up. Everything I'm doing is by design, right? I want you all to be alert. So, yeah, Starburst for everybody. Okay, have some. Anybody else? Starburst? Yeah, have some around. Starburst. Don't say I never gave you anything. All right, I got a feeling I'm about to say something I never said before, so I'm going to take some of this. And by the way, a lot of these videos are awesome. I'm not going to chew on camera, so I'm going to eat now. If you're on Instagram and you want to follow me, you can. My Instagram content is very, very positive. I put a lot of good stuff on Instagram. Sometimes when I do personal development or professional development seminars at other companies, I posted some of the content there. Because a lot of stuff that I've learned in Legal Shield is just what I share with other companies. But then when I learn stuff at other companies, I come back and share it with Legal Shield. So I have like a culmination of all of this stuff that I've learned. My Instagram page is The Total Gent, TheTotalGent. The Total Gent is my name on Instagram. Are you taking pictures? You're videoing me? Awesome. Catch this popcorn. I'm just kidding. Oh, and if anybody takes pictures, like tag me on them on Facebook, Instagram. I love that stuff. Because I don't bring my own photographer. And sometimes I like having pictures. It's kind of cool. Starburst are delicious, aren't they? Great. Anybody else? Starburst? Got plenty. So, before I go off onto my little tangent, give me some things that you guys are dealing with in the business. What are you dealing with? Challenges? Got to have some, because new associates started, millennials, what else? Follow up, what else? The MLM bubble in Utah. Please explain. She said the MLM bubble in Utah, meaning that it's just another one of those things. And there are a lot of them here. There are a lot of them everywhere. Guess what else there are a lot of here? People. So, all right, so before I get off into this, how can I do this? Okay, I know what I want to say. Just came to me. So, here's the thing. You're welcome. Anybody else, Starburst? All right.
We're going to pass it that way. Just a second.
Hold on. I also got some bitter honeys. Hold on, let me make sure he gets
it. I can't reach it. There we go. Got it.
Make sure. There's plenty left. All right, anybody else in Starburst? Listen, man. Okay. So it doesn't matter how many how-tos you are given if the spirit in which you do the how-tos is not correct. What I mean by that is hardware is nothing without software. Okay? I could give you a new MacBook Pro or whatever machine you like. I just happen to be a Mac guy. I could give you a machine that is capable of doing a lot of stuff. But if it doesn't have the proper software, it doesn't matter what the hardware is. Because software makes it go, makes it work, makes it run. If your thinking is not where it needs to be, what you're doing won't matter. Because you haven't been programming yourself properly from a software standpoint. So when you're dealing with challenges, whether it be in life, relationships, business, spirituality, social, it doesn't matter. If you're not thinking properly or working on the proper solutions or working on your software, then it doesn't matter what the hardware is. Because you're going to continue to get what the false program is putting out. Right? So if your thinking is, I'm not very social, nobody likes me, I have a hard time making friends, you exude that at networking events. You exude that when you're in public. You exude that when you're at a restaurant. You exude that when you're at a party. Because your thinking is constantly, this is what it is. And the universe will say, all right, I'm going to give you what you said. Here it is. That's it right there. Because you said it. And what you argue with yourself, what you believe, becomes your self-fulfilling prophecy. It becomes your self-fulfilling prophecy. Whatever it is that you say, continuously repeat it through spaced repetition over a period of time, becomes your self-fulfilling prophecy. Nobody loves me. You keep telling yourself that over and over again. That's exactly what you're going to get. I don't deserve this. You keep telling yourself that over and over again. That's what you're going to get. I'm so stupid. You keep telling yourself that over and over again. That's exactly what you're going to get. It's like you have a genie in the bottle. You rub the genie, you say something, and the universe is like, hey, there it is. This is what you want. This is what you asked for. Your wish is my command. So as you're going into appointments, if you're in sales, and you're going into appointments saying, nobody buys from me, guess what? Your attitude is that nobody buys from you. And at the end of your sales presentation, what happens? They don't buy from you. Because you've already told yourself, before you even sit down with that person, that they're not going to buy from you. You told yourself, I can't do this. If you think you can or you think you can't, in both situations, you are absolutely right. My daughter, 16 years old, she was 15 when she took state, second in state, in the long jump. 5'4", jumped 19 feet 4 inches. Her freshman year, she was jumping in the 17s. Her goal was to jump in the 20s. What do we do? All right, what do you need to do to jump in the 20s? I got to get stronger. She worked on getting stronger. What else? I got to get faster. She worked on getting faster. What else? Need some coaching. The coaches at her school were great, but we also got some outside coaches for her that specialized in speed and strength training. Her sophomore year, 19 feet, 4 inches, second in state. Now, the interesting part was her and the girl that took first, they both tied at 19 feet, 4 inches, but the other girl, her second best jump was better than my daughter's second best jump. So that's the only reason she came in second. And the other girl's second best jump was only like 2 inches better than my daughter's second best jump. And had my daughter not faulted on one of her jumps, she would have took first in state as a sophomore. But her software was, I can do this, I can get faster, I can get stronger, I can jump further. Her programming was, it's not impossible, I can do anything. We worked on that. So her human potential became what she believed. She said, Dad, I want to go to the 2020 Olympics. No, you don't. You are going to the 2020 Olympics. You're right. Dad, I'm going to the 2020 Olympics. 2020, I'll be at the Olympics with my baby. We don't know how, but we just figured, if we believe it, everything else is going to come into place. It's a software issue. Most people that have situations have software issues. It's not a hardware issue because you can do anything. You can become anything. I talk about the Wright brothers quite a bit in my presentations. The Wright brothers, before they took flight, a lot of people don't know this about the Wright brothers. Their father was a pastor. And before the Wright brothers took flight, their father, the pastor, did a sermon entitled, If God Wanted You to Fly, He Would Have Given You Wings. He thought his sons were crazy, and they made history in spite of his opinion, in spite of his sermon that God gave him. I don't know about that one, because God gave the Wright brothers a different, you know, something else. So it really doesn't matter what the people around you think unless you choose to believe them. It doesn't matter what the people around you think unless you choose to believe them. At some point in time, somebody told you something about your life, about your character, about your personality, and you said, oh, I'm going to take that on. Oh, she's so shy. Okay, let me put on my shy clothes, my shy outfit, figuratively speaking. And you became shy because somebody said you were shy. You know? Little kid is having problems at math. Parents are like, oh, he gets it honestly. I'm not good at math. Don't project that on your children. I have a new relationship with math. That's what I'm telling myself because I'm working on my MBA right now and I have to take accounting and finance courses. And remember how I told you I decided on my undergraduate degree. So instead of me saying I'm not a math brain, I say I have a newfound relationship with math. That's my mantra now. I have a newfound relationship with math. Right? But I didn't project my lack of math ability on my daughter because right now she's in AP calculus as a junior. Taking AP physics, you know, she's all of these courses that if she came home and asked me for help with her homework, I would say no. Like, you know, I would have to Google the answers. I have no idea. Right? But at the end of the day, a couple of things could happen. You could either say something about someone or to someone that empowers them, that lifts them up, or that tears them down. Now, the other side of that is, you yourself, when you listen to what other people say about you or to you, you have the ability to do three things: accept it, reject it, or neglect it. Those are three choices. I can accept what you say about me, I can reject what you say about me, or I can simply neglect what you say about me and do nothing. Sometimes that's the worst one, depending on what the thing is. But it's up to you. Nobody else has the ability to decide what your life is like but you. There's a difference between fate and destiny. Your fate is you have a born date, you have an expiration date. Your expiration date is your fate. Like, that's got to happen. It's the only thing that's guaranteed. Okay? They used to say, well, nothing is guaranteed but death and taxes. Well, ask Donald Trump. That might be different. Right? Taxes might not be guaranteed. Okay? So your fate is what ultimately is going to happen. Your destiny, though, has the same root as the word destination. And what happens when you're on your way to a destination? You get to decide how you get there. You plug something into your GPS. Take me from point A to point B. And they map it out for you. Do you have to follow that route? No. Sometimes you turn off. And what does it say? Rerouting, recalculating. Right? Sometimes you think you know a better way. When the GPS probably knew what they were doing. But you take your own way to get to your destination. So you have some say-so in it. Stop thinking that everybody else determines what your life is like. You determine what your life is like. You determine what your attitude is like. You determine all of these things. The gift of choice is so amazing. We are God's people, not God's puppets. God is not up there with a string like, you know, like we're marionettes making us move in this fashion and moving along. No, we have a choice. I had a choice whether I wanted to get up and be here today or not. I could have turned my phone off and went MIA and went straight to the airport. Right? But I had a choice. I honored my obligations and I fulfilled my duty by being here. But I'm exercising choice. You had a choice. You didn't have to be here this morning. You had a choice. And you chose to be here. Thank you for that choice. But you have a choice. And in everything you do, you have a choice. You have a choice in how you allow people to treat you. Y'all can talk back to me if you want to. Some of this is stinging, though, right? But you have a choice in how you allow people to treat you. You don't have to stick around if people are not treating you the way you want to be treated, deserve to be treated. Have a choice in that. Now, might it be challenging to maneuver around some relationships if it's family or, you know, if you swore an oath or swore vows or something like that? Yeah. But it's something that can be worked on. It's something that you don't just have to stand there and take or allow. You have a choice in who you become in life. You have a choice. I could have easily said, I'm young, black, from the south side of Chicago, in an area where drugs were sold, where murders took place, and I choose to become a product of my environment, and the only thing that's available for me is what I see every day. I could have chose that. I could have let that become my reality and my self-fulfilling prophecy. But instead, fortunately, I found mentors. I found people who believed enough in me. I found people, because remember what I said about information. When people say something about you, you could accept it, reject it, or neglect it. I found people that said wonderful things about me, that saw stuff in me that I didn't see yet, and I chose to accept what they said. I chose to explore what they saw because it was new to me, it was foreign to me. But because they said something about me that I didn't quite understand, let me dive a little deeper. You're a great writer. Am I? I didn't know that. I just thought I just write. I just write what I'm thinking. you're a great writer, you might want to explore this course. You might want to explore this fellowship. You might want to write some short stories and submit it to this magazine or this contest. Really? I didn't even know that stuff was available. But because I accepted the information that somebody said to me, because I knew that they had my best interest at hand, I took it. Now, here's the other challenge when it comes to accepting information of people that have your best interest at hand. Sometimes those people that do have your best interest, that do genuinely care about you, say stuff to you or about you that is not necessarily true, because all they have or all they know is the only thing that they could give you. For example, if a family member says, go get a real job, if you're an entrepreneur, and they say, go get a real job, or it's going to be so difficult for you to fulfill that dream. Well, all that they know is, they had a job for X amount of years, and they can trade dollars for hours, and they don't have the vision to create something that is their own. So they're only giving you, trying to protect you from what they're afraid of themselves. And it's not that they don't mean well, because a lot of people mean well when they tell you, you need a job, or you need to do this, or you need to do that. It's just that they have limited information and limited vision. So because they have limited information and limited vision, they can only give you what their own personal limitations allow. Limitations are self-imposed. They can be changed, but you will never get past the limitations that you put on yourself. I'll say that again. Limitations are self-imposed. They can be changed, but you will never get past the limitations that you put on yourself. Ever. I like Reese's peanut butter cups. Those are delicious. No, I don't want one. I will take some more popcorn, though. That was amazing. Y'all all right? This is a different type of Super Saturday. Huh? Welcome to Utah. I meant me. I'm probably different from what you guys generally get. I didn't mean you all. Did Dave Hall tell you all the story about the little people yet? So I've been to Utah one other time in my life, and I was very, very young at the time. I was a teenager at the time. And my uncle told me, he didn't even say the right name. He called it Midget Town. And he said that there was a place here where if you were over a certain height, you couldn't come in. Like, you couldn't live there. It was like this community of little people, right? And they would chase you out of there if you like, went over there. It was like their own separate community. I'm a teenager, and this is my uncle. Of course I believe what my uncle tells me, right? And so Dave Hall tells me, I'm on the phone with him. He's like, have you ever been to Utah? I'm like, no. I was like, not really. We went through Utah once. You know, we were on our way. Where were we on our way? We might have been on our way to California or something. And I was like, yeah. It's like, the only thing I know about is Midget Town. And he's like, what? He's like, I've been here my whole life. What are you talking about? I'm like Midget Town, where the little people live, where you can't go in there if you're a certain. He's like, that does not exist here. And I'm like, bro, my uncle told me this, man. Like, yeah. So he comes to training on Wednesday. And who is he telling about it? He was telling somebody about it, and you told them it's a thing. It's not a thing. It's an urban legend. It's a myth. But they had this thing called Hobbitville, right? My uncle didn't Hobbitville, Midget Town, same thing. But you know what I mean. But so Hobbitville. So of course I believe my uncle. So as soon as I got off the phone with Dave, I'm texting my uncle, and my uncle's like, oh yeah, no, it doesn't really exist. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that all this time? For the past 20 plus years, I've been thinking that it's some Midgetville, right? There really is one across from Westminster?
It's an urban myth. There's little buildings. It's in an aviary.
Okay, so it kind of exists.
It's not really for little people. It's just an urban legend that's for little people.
Wow. I wish I had more time. I would explore that before I left. No, we won't be able to go. My flight is at 4 o'clock, right? Like, I board at 3:30, huh?
I'll come back.
I can jump over them, though. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about updating your software. So, there was a guy whose son always wanted to play. Now, this guy was an entrepreneur, business owner. He was very, very busy. He's very, very successful. But every time his son wanted to play, he would say, "Hey, I'm too busy. Not now, I'm busy." And his son said, "Dad, you're always too busy." So the guy had a magazine, and he said, "Okay, I need to keep my son occupied while I do this." So he tore a page out of the magazine of the globe, the world, and he tore it into a bunch of little tiny pieces and made a bit of a puzzle out of it. And he said, "Son, once you put the world back together, we can play." And he tore it up to a bunch of little pieces. And his son is like 5 years old. He does not know world geography like that, so he doesn't know what goes where. So he tears it up in all these little pieces, thinking he's buying himself some time. And his son comes back to him less than 10 minutes later with a completely fixed puzzle. And the dad is amazed. He's like, "I must have a child prodigy on my hands. How did you fix the world so quickly?" He said, "Dad, on the back of the magazine page, there was a picture of a man. When you fix the man, you fix the world." It all starts with you. It all starts with where you are, what you want to do, what you want to become. All of these things are important. So, you all have seen this before, but let's talk about it in a fashion that you may never have talked about it before. So, what you want your lifestyle to be is a direct correlation to what results you get. Your results come from your actions come from your attitude, and your attitudes give you come from your philosophies. What are your philosophies? Your philosophies are what you know, how you hold it, and how you let it affect you. What you know, how you hold it, and how you let it affect you.
If you can get some pictures from me, Mike, that'd be great.
So your philosophies are what you know, in the horizontal way too, how you hold it, and how you let it affect you. Okay? An example of a philosophy. Successful people do what unsuccessful people are not willing to do. It's a philosophy. It's a way of thinking. Okay? So your philosophies are what you know. Your attitude is how you feel about what you know. How you feel about what you know. So your attitude you get to pick every single day. You can pick a good one or a bad one. Your mind is a garden. You plant the seeds. You could grow flowers or you could grow weeds. It's up to you. It's your attitude. Right? Now, how do you program your philosophies? Where do your philosophies come from? Personal development. What you read, what you listen to, who you associate with. Your attitude. Do you have a good one? Do you have a bad one? Your attitude will, in turn, directly affect your actions. You're committed to, so prime example, I was committed to getting down from 213 pounds, being in better shape, right? So, all right, I knew what I needed to do, but when that alarm clock would go off at 6 o'clock in the morning for me to get up and go to the gym, because as a networker, I don't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. There's nothing for me to do at 6 o'clock in the morning, right? But when it's time to go to the gym, I had to get up. Floor rang. I mean, the alarm clock will ring, you know. And I get up and I put my feet on the floor. And I have two options right now. Oh, my God, the floor is cold. It's raining outside. I'm tired. I don't want to go to the gym. Or, all right, floor is cold. That's waking me up faster. Let me get my clothes. Let me grab my bag. Let me go to the gym. What's my attitude? Okay. Your attitude gives you your actions. What are you willing to do in order to achieve the success that you wanted to desire? I didn't mean video. I just wanted pictures. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. You're doing your thing. All right. Got it. Okay. So your actions give you your results. And your results, in turn, give you your lifestyle. So if your lifestyle is not where you want it to be, what results are you getting? If you're not getting the results that you want, well, what have your actions been? If your actions aren't up to par, well, what is your attitude? If your attitude sucks, well, what are your philosophies? It all adds up. Like, you can't have one without the other. That's how this thing works. It's a chain reaction type deal. Okay? Now, I'm going to need volume on this. I don't have to mute it yet. The major challenge, and I talked a little bit about this earlier, the major challenge when it comes to us going for our success has a lot to do with social norms and what we take on from other people. Remember, accept it, reject it, neglect it. So how we view information that we receive from other people has a direct impact on what we do and the actions that we take. I got volume on this back there.
To answer that question, we set up a hidden camera experiment to see if this woman would stand up at the sound of this tone, simply because everyone else is. You might be thinking you'd never go along with this. Or would you? After just 3 beeps, and without knowing why she's doing it, this woman is now conforming perfectly to the group. But what happens if we take the group away?
Elaine, please. Okay,
now she's alone, the crowd is gone, and nobody is watching her, except our hidden cameras. What do you think she'll do? She's now conforming to the rules of the group without them even being there. Now, watch what happens when we introduce another outsider who doesn't know the rules.
Have a seat, and they'll be out in just a couple minutes. Thanks so much.
Think she'll teach the new guy what to do? We kept the cameras rolling as more unsuspecting patients arrived. Slowly but surely, what began as a random rule for this woman has now become the social norm for everyone in this waiting room. Here to explain what's going on in their brains is Jonah Berger of the University of Pennsylvania.
This sort of internalized form of herd behavior is part of what we call social learning. Starting at a very early age, when we see members of our group perform a task, our brains literally reward us for following in their footsteps.
When I saw everybody stand up, I felt like I needed to join them. Otherwise, I'm like excluded. Once I decided to go with it, then I felt much more comfortable.
Conformity is how we become socialized, but it can also cause us to develop bad habits or repeat past wrongs.
And it's why even this rebel, who wasn't standing for any of this nonsense, eventually joined the ranks. And the only thing more shocking than seeing how easily conformity affects the way you act is that similar forces are subconsciously shaping the way you think right now.
How crazy is that? Oh, it's a thing. It's definitely a thing. So, social norms a lot of times affect how we interact with people, what we do, what we think, what we believe. So many times we're taught stuff without understanding the basis of what it is that we've been taught. And we continue to develop these habits, perform these habits, throughout our entire lives without having a complete understanding of where it even came from or why we do it. Prime example, one of my business partners, her daughter asked her, she said, "Mom, every year at Christmas we cut the ends off of the hams before we put them in the pot. Why do we do that?" She said, "You know what? I don't know. Let me call your grandmother and ask her because that's where I got it from." So she called her mom, the young lady's grandmother. She said, "Mom, you know, your granddaughter just asked me, why do we cut the ends off of our hams at Christmas time?" She said, "Baby, I don't do that. I haven't done that in years." She's like, "Well, why did you do it?" She said, "Well, the pot we had when you were younger was too small, so we cut the ends off in order for it to fit in the pot." So here she is, grown now, and teaching her daughter to cut the ends off of the hams when it was something she learned and she didn't know why she did it, but she just continued to do it. How many things in your life do you have that you were taught that you continue to do that might be crazy or might have no real justification or no current validity now in today's day and age, but your parents or grandparents or aunt or uncle or somebody taught you that and you continue to do it without knowing why? That is what the world has become in large. A bunch of habits and old traditions that we continue for a very long period of time without understanding why we do it. And until somebody challenges the social norm, we continue to do these things and we get crazy results or lack of results based off of the things that we're doing that might not have any validity. I'm very well educated. I have a couple of degrees already and I'm working on an MBA right now. So it's not that I don't believe in formal education. My challenge is, what do you do with the education you receive? Because I'm an entrepreneur. So people are like, "Well, why are you working on your MBA if you're an entrepreneur?" Because, well, business owners are entrepreneurs. They just own businesses and employ other people. But the challenge is, our school system, when it was developed to teach people how to become employees. In many cases, the school was right next to the factory where Dad worked. The lunch whistle for Dad to go on lunch break was the same whistle for his son to go on lunch break. And so they're training them. Go to school, do a repetitive task over and over and over, and at the end of the quarter, you get a grade. What is work? Go to work, do a repetitive task, and at the end of every week or 2 weeks, you get a check. So we're taught these things. They become habitual. They take over our lives. They're second nature. We're now doing them, but we don't have a good reason why we do them. And until you learn to become a critical thinker, and ask, there's nothing wrong with asking questions. Now, if you're just asking questions to be a jerk, then there's something wrong with that. But if you're asking questions to get valid answers, to have a better understanding, so that you can propel your life or your business forward, there's nothing wrong with that. So until you learn to become a critical thinker and think for yourself, you will always be subjected to the rules, traditions, and habits of other people that might not be serving you and ultimately will not get you where you want to be. So keep that in mind. Think about that. Now, did I take the clicker to the back? Is the clicker back there? Nope. Okay. I sent my popcorn. No. I think I did take it back there. And now for this quick commercial break. Thank you, sir. Everybody give Doug a round of applause. He's a great clicker bringer. Never seen anybody bring a clicker as well as Doug. Yes, ma'am. Sure. Okay. So for those of you that didn't hear her question, she said in the video, the young lady said she felt comfortable doing it, and fear and discomfort is something that is a hurdle that she faces in the business. I would venture to say that it's probably a hurdle that all of us face. And I would also venture to say that what's on the other side of fear is so much better than the little bit of fear with making an exposure. What do I mean by that? I mentioned I bought my daughter a car, right? Had I not overcome my fear of prospecting, I wouldn't have been able to buy her a car. So that became more important to me, my why, not the big why that Dave Hall has on top of his house, not that why. But my reason why became so much more important than the fear that I faced. In Claude Bristol's The Magic of Believing, he said human beings are only born with two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. Those are the only two fears we were born with. And I would venture to say that maybe only one of those is accurate, because I don't think my now 16-year-old, I remember when we brought her home from the hospital and up until the point she was like one year old or something like that, we have vaulted ceilings. We have really high ceilings. And so I used to play this game with her in our living room where I would throw her up. Catch her, swing her between my legs, throw her up, catch her. And her mom would come in there. She's like, oh, my God, what are you doing with the baby? You're going to kill her. Put her down, put her down. I'm like, we're having fun. She's like, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. So I put Raylan down, and Raylan would start crying. She's like having a fit. She's crying. And as soon as her mom left, I picked her back up, and I threw up and went back to where we were. She never had the fear of falling. This is the child that as soon as she was tall enough to get on roller coasters, she's like, Dad, can we get on the front? And I'm like, whoa, like, slow down, right? So any other fear that we have, we learned it. Now, we learned it because somebody else put it on us or they told us. Like, the fear of rejection, who told you rejection was bad? There was a girl in high school that I was, at the time, I thought I was madly in love with. I just wanted her to be my girlfriend so bad, so bad. Like, she was so amazing, and she rejected me. And she ended up being part of this, like, auto theft ring. I'm so glad she rejected me, because I would have been caught, you know? Rejection's not necessarily a bad thing, right? So you got to look at those things, right? So there's a proverb or a story that I read. I never told I never associated rejection with that auto theft ring story until just now. See, there's a village, and there's a guy in the village. And they raise horses. And his son goes out and finds these wild horses and brings them back to the village. And the old man's neighbor next door says, your son bought back these wild horses. That's amazing, isn't it? And the old man says, I don't know. Is it? The guy kind of looks, the neighbor looks at him and is like, okay, whatever, walks off. So his son is trying to break the horses in, and he ends up falling off the horses, of one of the horses, and breaks his leg. And a neighbor comes over and, oh, I heard about what happened to your son. That's horrible, isn't it? And the old man says, I don't know, is it? The neighbor's like, this is weird. Like, of course it's horrible. Your son broke his leg. Whatever. Goes off. The warlord comes, and he's recruiting young people for the war that they're about to fight. And he doesn't take his son because his son has a broken leg. And the next door neighbor comes and is like, man, I heard your son got passed over. They didn't take him for the war. Is that good or bad? Right? The moral of the story is there is no good, there is no bad, except for the mind sees it as so. We don't know what that rejection leads to. We don't know. You know what I mean? So all of these things that we're worried about make no difference because we're worried about somebody else's opinion. I used to worry about what other people thought and said about me until I tried to pay my bills with their opinion. I don't care. It doesn't matter. And a lot of times, so let's talk about the fear of rejection. A lot of times, this whole fear of rejection thing has a lot to do with who the person is to you, not necessarily what they said. Okay? Are you married? Is your husband here? He's gone. What is your name? Jody. So Jody's here with us having a good time, and on her way out, she's on her phone texting, maybe not looking where she's going, walking to her car, and she accidentally bumps into a gentleman, accidentally, barely brushes up against him. She's texting her husband, letting her know that she's had a great day and she's on her way home, and she brushes up against this gentleman, and the gentleman says, I hate you. Jody's probably going to be like, whoa, dude, like it's not that serious, no big deal, I'm sorry. She won't even think about it. She'll go on her way like that guy was crazy. She gets in her car. She drives home. Jody opens the door. Honey, I'm home. A meat cleaver whizzes past Jody's face and sticks in the door. She looks and sees her reflection in the meat cleaver, and she looks and she sees her husband over there, and a pitcher stands at the end of it because he just threw this meat cleaver at her. And she says, Jody, I hate you. Now, meat cleaver aside, do the words from her husband have a different gravity to them than the guy she brushed up against because of who her husband is to her? Exact same words, but who it came from, we make it matter. When it really doesn't. It really, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't. Do not become emotionally tied to the outcome of what your exposures and presentations are. You will kill yourself doing that. Rejection isn't real. It is a figment of your imagination that somebody told you it was bad or it hurt or it this or it that. Who cares? Who cares? When I got here, we landed and we were going to FanX, and because I love comic books, it's like a Comic-Con thing. And I met a guy in the restaurant we were at, and, you know, we ended up exchanging numbers. His name is Josh, which, ironically, Josh is the character in my book. Joshua Stokes is the character in my book. But I told him that. We exchanged information, right? And I'm going to send him some videos about Legal Shield. If he doesn't get in or he doesn't get a membership, so what? If he does, I just made $280, $280+ at my level. And if he gets in the business, now I'm going to start growing a team in Idaho because that's where he's from. I took a chance. But I'm not like, oh, my God, Josh might think I'm crazy if I try to be his friend. I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's worth the risk. It's worth the risk. What if somebody was so concerned? Think about it like this. What if somebody was so concerned about your opinion or so worried about your opinion that they never exposed you to Legal Shield? We think about what we do, right, because it's from us on out. But what if the person that exposed you to Legal Shield, whether it's a friend, family member, or a total cold stranger, what if they were so worried about what you may or may not say that they kept Legal Shield from you and you never heard about it? That's a little different now, huh? your life will be a lot different. Your associations will be a lot. I can't imagine my life without Legal Shield now. Oh, my God. I was a, I won't say a horrible human being, but I wasn't the person I am today. When my, like, old friends from high school and college and my fraternity brothers come to a presentation, finally, and they hear me speak, or they see what I'm doing, or they see me on Facebook, or the little positive videos that I post, they're like, dude, where did this come from? And I was like, man, my association's with Legal Shield. I'm around some amazing people. But if Emily Ferguson had never exposed me and said, this is something that you might want to take a look at, I may have never heard about it. Because there are people that still haven't heard about us. So, if the person didn't expose you, they would have done you a disservice. And if you don't expose other people, you're doing them a disservice. So don't worry about what the outcome is. Outcome doesn't matter. It's all about your choice to go be amazing. Let me deal with your question since I'm on this topic now, right? Utah, the MLM capital of the world. It's great. It doesn't matter if you're building rapport because it's not about the business, it's about the friendship. Josh doesn't even know what I do yet. We talked about he had this like curly mustache thing that guys do. I can't grow one of those. So I told him I was envious of his mustache. He's like, man, it's a lot of upkeep, bro. Don't even worry about it. Like, you're better off without it. Right? We talked about Comic-Con. You know, I talked a little bit about my book, talked about where he works. So we built all of this rapport. As a matter of fact, this is what we're going to do. We're about to call Josh right now. That is what we are going to do. He might be at the con, though, so I don't know if I'll get him, but we'll see. Call Josh, Idaho.
Calling Josh, Idaho.
That's how I remember who he is. That voicemail?
The wireless customer you are calling is not available. Please try again later.
I don't know what happened. I sent him a text right when I met him, so. Oh, well. So, anyway, I was Josh. Or not. Right? But the whole point is, I built rapport. I made a friend. And then I'm going to tell him, hey, Josh, I want to run a business idea by you later. If I send you a video, will you look at it? He might say, yes, I will. Or he might say, no, I won't. I'll be like, okay, great. Either way, I don't care. Doesn't matter. The more rapport you build, I have friends that don't have the membership, are not associates, but have given me a ton of referrals. Every time something of a legal nature pops up, they're like, oh, you need to talk to my friend Mel. He has this legal service thing. I don't know exactly what it is. He could tell you more about it, but he could probably help you. I have a friend named Morel Howard. I've known her since high school. And Morel probably is responsible for about 40 to 50 memberships that I've written over the years. Because she's always sending me people. And I told her, oh, you know, you can get on board. You can make this money and all that. She's not interested. Okay, did I stop being her friend? Right? Another thing is, people get crazy. You won't support my business. You're not a good friend. No. Friendship shouldn't be contingent upon them supporting your business. But we excommunicate a lot of people because they didn't get a membership from us. No. Because eventually they might. You were friends before you got in the business. Why not continue to be friends?
right? This is like them saying, well, I like karate, but you don't like karate, so you can't be my friends because we can't kick each other. It's dumb. How dumb would that be? So dumb, right? But we get into business, and then now, I will tell you this. I did stop dating a young lady because she didn't get the membership. Let me tell the whole story. So we go to a business briefing. I'm not the presenter. And she sees the presentation. I was like, you know, we're going to go out to eat after this. And she sees the presentation, and she doesn't get a membership. I said, you know, what did you like best? She was like, everything is okay. I was like, well, you know, I'm not asking you to do the business, but you at least see the value in the membership, don't you? And she was like, I don't know. I was like, well, what don't you know? I mean, I know you make enough to get it. So, you know, I know you own property. So she was like, I don't think I would need anything like this. I was like, yeah, but it's like peace of mind. It's like, you know, you're a young black woman in Chicago. And this is around the time that stuff has been happening. Y'all have seen the news. I don't have to tell you this. I'm just like, so you don't see the value in this? She was like, no, not really. I was like, okay. We went out to dinner, had a good time, had some laughs, and that was our last date. Here's my philosophy, though. I have children. My oldest daughter is grown now, but I have children. If I can't trust you to make a $26 decision for something that is important, could save you money, get your will done, all that, if you don't have the foresight to make a $26 decision, then I can't have you potentially as a step parent making decisions for my children. I got to question your line of thinking at that point. And her line of thinking didn't align with my line of thinking, so I thought it was best we didn't see each other anymore. Y'all better break up with some people, I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, this is awesome. I'm having a ball here in Utah.
Okay, let's talk about leadership. The action of leading a group of people or an organization. Different styles of leadership. The state or position of being a leader. The leadership of the party. So, for those of you that don't have organizations, or for those of you that do have organizations, leadership is about leading yourself first. If you cannot lead yourself, it will be impossible for you to lead a team. If you cannot lead yourself to make the decisions that you need to make as far as making exposures, doing follow-ups, doing appointments, all of these things that you want other people to do, if you can't lead by example, we call it exampleship. If you can't lead yourself, you won't be able to lead a team. I've been in Performance Club for 200-plus months. Performance Club should be your floor, not your ceiling. That's entry level. I can't wait for my 16-year-old to turn 18 because I know she's going to rock the business. Well, she might not. I mean, when she turns 18, she'll be going to the Olympics. So that might not be on her list of things to do at the time. But I remember when she was younger, 6, 7 years old, you know, she used to give people DVDs. Watch this DVD, call my daddy. that was her line. Watch this DVD and call my daddy. That's what she would tell people. Watch this DVD and call my daddy. Oh, my God, you're 7. For every membership that comes my way because of you, Chuck E. Cheese, whatever you want, right? But you have to be able to lead yourself if you want to lead other people. Okay. Leadership is about activity, and leadership is also about temperance. When I talk about temperance, I don't mean with alcohol. That's what people associate temperance with. But your ability to deal with people in a fashion that leaves them touched, moved, and inspired. People should leave conversations with you feeling good. It's what leaders do. It's what real leaders do. Even when you have to scold them or correct them, they should feel good about the conversation afterwards because, number one, you've done it out of love. And number two, You've made so many positive deposits in their lives. Like, I've made so many positive deposits in my daughter's life. When it's time to have a tough conversation, it's not really tough. Because all of the other stuff that I've done with her and for her has been so amazing that when it's time to have the tough conversations or I need to tell her something, prime example, when she, you know, hit freshman, sophomore year in high school or whatever, because she doesn't live with me, she lives with my ex and her stepdad, right? And we had to have a conversation like, hey, Pooter, that's what I call it, Pooter. Hey, Pooter, I know you have a social life, but you also have a father, and I'm not going to be here forever. And I don't want anything to happen to me or for you to get older and for you to regret the time that we didn't spend because your friends, not that your friends aren't important, but you can't just call me when you need money. Tough conversation to have, you know, and she got it. She got it. But we've done so much other stuff. I'm at every track meet, unless I'm out of town, you know, I'm at every track meet. Like, it's not fair for me. And we live 50 miles away from each other. Okay. It's 50 miles from my doorstep to her doorstep. It's not fair for me to drive a few times a week to come watch you run track and be there and support you. But you can't hang out with me on a weekend that's supposed to be our weekend. She got it. She's like, you're right, Dad. I'll be there this weekend. What are we doing? So many positive deposits, though. And that's part of what leadership is. So as a leader, people are going to get on your nerves. Oh, trust me. There's some crazy people in Legal Shield. I'm one of them, but still. Right? There's some crazy people in Legal Shield. But the challenge is, even in dealing with them, they're people too. Because at some point in time, we all didn't know something. The biggest thing that I see, and for the executive directors and leaders on the front row, and for those of you that are emerging leaders, the biggest thing that I see that I want you to be careful of is how you treat people. Because we didn't always know everything. And I've seen leaders, and I pull them to the side. I don't care. I'm from Chicago. I don't care. If we need to have a conversation, we're going to have a conversation. But I've seen leaders, when somebody came and asked them a question, they gave them the answer, but they gave it to them with the stank face. Like, you know, with an attitude. It's like, oh, my God, I can't believe he doesn't know this. Well, you didn't always know it. So at some point in time, you had to learn it. It's more powerful for you to be the person to teach them and make them feel good about what they learned than feeling bad about what they didn't know. It's part of leadership. And if you ever plan on leading an organization, whether it be here in Legal Shield or anywhere else at your job, because here's what I found. My leaders on my team and in my marketplace that continuously plug into our trainings and get personally developed through Legal Shield, they end up becoming rock stars on their jobs, getting all types of promotions and stuff like that. Then they're like, man, I really want to leave my job, but they're treating me so good now, right? You know, and then they get to the point where I'm like, hey, well, once your income surpasses your job, then you can think about that. That matches your job. I want it when your income matches your job. I don't think that's a good deal. Because what happens is, if you make $50,000 on your job and you make $50,000 in Legal Shield, now you're used to a $100,000 lifestyle, you quit your job, then you drop back down to $50,000. So we need to get your Legal Shield money up to at least $80,000, $90,000. And you keep living, you know, like you're only making $50,000 a year. It's a financial tip, by the way. So leadership is really important. And sometimes to be a leader, it takes you being a nut job. And what I mean by that is you got to be willing to get out there and do stuff that other people aren't willing to do. Kind of like the exposure thing. The exposure thing, when I am not, people see me in front of a room and they're like, oh, Mel's an extrovert. No, I am an introvert. I don't go out much. Like, I'm comfortable here because I do it so much. But I'm at home reading a book, watching a movie with my lady, or, you know, playing cards with a few friends. I don't necessarily care for big crowds. I enjoy music, so I might go to a concert or something like that. But I'm not the person that's itching to get out of the house. You know, I'm not even really an outdoors person. Probably because I grew up in Chicago and 4 months out of the year is freezing cold, like, you know. But I'm an introvert. I force myself to be extroverted because I understand it pays huge dividends in our industry. Okay? And sometimes you gotta be crazy in the sense that you do something that's uncomfortable. So I tell people, if you're uncomfortable making exposures, you don't make exposures. Create a character to make your exposures. Since I'm an actor, this is one of the things I think of. So now, instead of it being, because Mel Roberson is not my full government name, that's a persona that I created. It's what I go by, right? So, my government name is the person that's at home. Mel Roberson is the leader in Legal Shield. And what are the attributes or characteristics of Mel Roberson? He's confident, he's outgoing, he's friendly. Confident, outgoing, friendly. He's never met a stranger. These are all of the things that I gave the character of Mel Roberson. So now, when I'm out talking to people and I'm meeting people, it's not my introverted self that wants to stay home. It's the character that I created. And anybody could be a character. You can create any character that you want. What character did you used to create when the bill collector was calling your home? Right? She's not here. The character you created. Right? So just create a character to go get what you want. It's a DBA. It's a doing business as. Right? You create this DBA character persona that will go out and be adventurous, courageous, and all of these things. And it becomes amazing. So being a leader, sometimes you gotta be a little crazy. You all have seen this before, but I'm going to show it to you again.
If you've learned a lot about leadership and making a movement, then let's watch a movement happen start to finish in under 3 minutes and dissect some lessons. First, of course, a leader needs the guts to stand alone and look ridiculous. But what he's doing is so simple, it's almost instructional. This is key. You must be easy to follow. Now here comes the first follower with a crucial role. He publicly shows everyone else how to follow. Notice how the leader embraces him as an equal. So it's not about the leader anymore. It's about them, plural. Notice how he's calling to his friends to join in. You take guts to be your first follower. You stand out and you brave ridicule yourself. Being a first follower is an underappreciated form of leadership. The first follower transforms a lone nut into a leader. If the leader is the flint, the first follower is the spark that really makes the fire. Now here's the second follower. This is a turning point. It's proof the first has done well. Now it's not a lone nut, and it's not two nuts. Three is a crowd, and a crowd is news. A movement must be public. Make sure outsiders see more than just the leader. Everyone needs to see the followers because new followers emulate followers, not the leader. Now here come two more people, then three more immediately. Now we've got momentum. This is the tipping point, and now we have a movement. As more people jump in, it's no longer risky. If they were on the fence before, there's no reason not to join in now. They won't stand out, they won't be ridiculed, and they will be part of the in crowd if they hurry. And over the next minute, you'll see the rest who prefer to stay part of the crowd, because eventually they'd be ridiculed for not joining. And ladies and gentlemen, that is how a movement is made. So let's recap what we've learned. If you are a version of the shirtless dancing guy, all alone, remember the importance of nurturing your first few followers as equals, making everything clearly about the movement, not you. Be public, be easy to follow. But the biggest lesson here, did you catch it? Leadership is over-glorified. Yes, it started with the shirtless guy, and he'll get all the credit, but you saw what really happened. It was the first follower that transformed a lone nut into a leader. There's no movement without the first follower. See, we're told that we all need to be leaders, but that would be really ineffective. The best way to make a movement, if you really care, is to courageously follow and show others how to follow. When you find a lone nut doing something great, have the guts to be the first person to stand up and join in.
Unmuted. All right. Jason's going to kill me because I keep muting myself. I'm so used to muting myself.
because at my Super Saturdays, I have to do that.
You want to come to Chicago? Work there? Be great.
All right. I heard that. That's a verbal contract, bro. And I got it on tape. Too cold. What are you talking about, too cold? Whatever. Too cold.
You're like the guy that lived next door to the guy whose son fell off the horse. Right? It's not too cold. It's just cold. It's not good or bad. It just is. Cars are preheated. Hit the start button. Streets are shoveled. You know, people live there. It's a matter of preference, so if that's not your preference, I get it. But he said he would come, so I'm appreciative. I'm appreciative. All right, what do I want to talk about next? Let's see what else is on this slide. Oh, 7 steps to successful goal setting. We could do that. Goal setting is a huge thing, okay? And I don't have enough time to go into extensive detail on each one of these points. What I will tell you, though, is that there's a CD in the back. I think we have some left where I do a goal setting seminar. And also, too, the Lost Earl Schoff files are on that CD. Earl Schoff is Jim Rohn's mentor. And Earl Schoff did a goal setting seminar back in the 1940s, I think. And there are a couple of differences between my philosophies and his philosophies. So with personal development, it's personal. Chew the meat, spit out the bone. Take what applies to you, what you like, what you think works best for you, and then you work that like crazy. Okay? So if you want this goal setting thing later and Earl Schoff's, we got some of those in the back for $5. There's another. Jason, pause the recording for a second. All right. So as I was saying, there's 7 steps to goal setting. And I don't have a ton of time to go over all of this stuff with you, but I'll give you the basis of it, okay? If you do these 7 things, then you will be okay. All right. Step number 1 is think it and ink it. Think it and ink it. Your goals need to be written. And when I say think it and ink it, I mean with a pen and paper or pencil and paper. I do not mean on a tablet, unless you have a tablet where you're writing, not where you're typing. There's a different synapse that happens. That's awesome. There's a different synapse that happens in your brain when you actually are physically writing as opposed to typing. Okay? So think it and ink it. You all may have heard the story before. The graduating class of a Harvard Business School was surveyed. 90% or 95% of them didn't have their goals written down.
Yeah, it's red.
Huh? Is all that muting?
That's cool. Just throw me Duracell.
So bingo, we're back in action.
All right. Graduating class of Harvard Business School survey, 5% of them have their goals written down. 95% of them do not have their goals written down. 10 years later, they go back and survey the class. The 5% that had their goals written down had a higher net worth than the entire other 95% that did not have their goals written down. That 5% made more money than the other 95% combined. Think it and ink it. Number 2, narrow the scope. You have to be specific. You can't just say, I want to make some money, because then you make a dollar. You've made some money. What are your specific goals? You got to be specific. Okay? Number 3, create your date with destiny. There has to be a timeline. Any of you ever had long-term goals before?
and you figured out you had them for a long time, right? You know, a goal without a deadline, goals without a deadline is nothing more than a wish list. It's just a wish list. I will do this by this. You know, and that's part of the four disciplines of execution too. But I will do this by this. Bam, bam. Because then you got something to shoot for. Otherwise, you're not shooting at all. All right? Give up to go up, number four. What are you willing to sacrifice in order to achieve your goal? What are you willing to sacrifice? I tell this story a lot. I'm an avid paintball player. Like, I was on a semi-pro paintball team. I played 26-hour scenario paintball games where we run night vision, full communication, earpieces and everything. I was a bounty hunter for my team. Like, they used to send me out on the solo missions because I was fast. Get in, get out, you know, take out a target, intercept a target. I've been in paintball magazines before for playing paintball. Like, paintball was my thing. Every free weekend I had, if I didn't have my daughter, I was playing paintball. Like, that's how serious I was about paintball, right? And I was going for a goal. A company had announced some promotion or something. And there was a couple of people on my team trying to get to executive director. And I was like, all right, paintball season, y'all won't see me. And they're like, whoa. Like, bro, that's like, you know, a major player of the team. We're a small platoon. There's seven of us, you know. It was like, that's like, dude, we can't run the same without you. I said, I get it. I'll give you one game this season. You know, so our practice games, our weekends, and all that other stuff, you know, we had four major games and three minor games a season. We had seven games a season that we would play. Four major, like big ones, where people would fly in from all over the country, or we would fly somewhere to play. And we had like three regional games we would play. I was like, one game. Maybe two, depending on how my work is going. And they're just looking at me like, how can you, like, we're a sponsored team too. You know what I mean? So this wasn't like I'm just shelling out a bunch of money. We had sponsors for a lot of our stuff. And that year, I played one game and two practice games, and that was it. And I hit my goals. But I sacrificed something that I love doing. I still play paintball to this day. Should have played paintball instead of church ball. Sacrifice. Five, plan your work and work your plan. What is your roadmap? And the roadmap will change. It's not always going to stay the same. It's all right to change the plan, but don't change the goal. Just because you didn't get there, we do something called a plan, do, review. You work your plan, you do your plan, you review your plan, you see what's working, what's not working. Number six, look at your goals at least three times daily. At least three times daily. You need those things embedded in your subconscious mind. Three times a day, look at your goals. In the morning, midday, and before you go to bed. Those are my recommendations. Now, if you can look at them more than that, then that's awesome too. What you think about, you bring about. What you ask for, you get. If you act the way you want to be, soon you will be the way that you act. So you got to have those things in your head. Constant reminders. And I go into more detail on the CD. And I'm not saying this just to sell you a CD. It's just that I only have a few more minutes, and there's so much more content that we have to cover. So I'm not, like, trying to rush you through it so you buy a $5 CD. It's not going to make or break me if you don't get the CD. All right? Number seven, accountability. Tell someone you would hate to let down. This is a very important one. For those of you that have been in the company long enough to remember Wilburn Smith, my book is actually dedicated to Wilburn Smith and one of my English professors from college who saw more in me than I saw in myself. And Wilburn Smith is one of the persons in my life, one of the people in my life, that taught me the importance of setting goals. And so part of that was, or part of it with me was, I let him know some things I was trying to achieve because he believed so much in me, I didn't want to let him down. Right? So be careful who you share your goals with because everybody's not going to support you in you achieving your goals. That's the other part. Everybody's not going to support you. But if they will support you, and they will hold you accountable, then it's okay to share with them because they will push you towards your goals, not try to keep you from them. So that's really, really important. Really, really important. You know, another thing with the goals, and I'll tell you about, and as far as accountability is concerned, for those of you that have families, especially if you have children, and you're going to be taking time away from your children because you plan on really running hard with this Legal Shield thing, tell your children what you're going to do for them once you achieve this goal. Like, daddy's going to be gone or mommy's going to be gone for quite a few days. We won't have as much time as we used to. But guess what? It's September and December. We're going to go to Disneyland or, you know, whatever the achievement is for them. Oh, trust me, your kids will hold you accountable. Mommy, why are you here? Don't you have an appointment to do? So accountability is huge. Where have my goals taken me? So some of the stuff that I've been able to do. I was on Empire. I was on Chicago PD. I'm a huge fan of dream boards. So on one of my dream boards, do I have a picture of it here? No, it's not on here. It's not on this presentation. On one of my dream boards, now, mind you, here are the seven steps of goal setting, right? My seven steps here. I know better, right? Especially one and two. Keep that in mind as I tell this story. So on my dream board, this is the beginning of 2018, the beginning of 2016, I put on my dream board all of this stuff about acting, and Chicago PD is one of my favorite shows, and I'm like, roll on Chicago PD. A month later, I book a role on Chicago PD. Right? These are speaking roles. I'm not talking about extra work. I'm talking about speaking roles. Right? I book a role on Chicago PD. I'm on Chicago PD. And I'm thinking to myself, why did I not put reoccurring role on Chicago PD? I know better. But Chicago PD, I just filmed, there's a television show that comes on Showtime called The Chi. It's an urban show about Chicago. I just filmed my episode. I'm in season 2, episode 2. I have several films on Amazon Prime. Some of them are free on YouTube. I think we have some stuff on Netflix still if they haven't taken it down. But, you know, I have some stuff. But I started writing out my goals, including my television stuff. So, like, every day, we talked about this for those of you that were at the Q&A yesterday. Somebody asked me how I start my day. I start my day by writing my goals in first person as if they have already happened. I write 7 affirmations after that. I write 3 things I'm grateful for, and then I write 3 accomplishments from the previous day. So when I'm writing out my goals, I say, I am a global leader making a significant impact in the world through business and charity. My annual income is $7 million a year. I'm a platinum-level executive director in Legal Shield with an organization writing over 1,500 memberships a month and helping over 300 people level up qualified monthly. I am an award-winning actor. I am an award-winning actor and a series regular on a major network TV show. Writers and directors seek me out for major roles. I am a New York Times best-selling author and speaker providing valuable content to my audiences. My real estate portfolio is large and profitable. I'm a solid 200 pounds with an amazing physique because of my diet and exercise habits. My family is well provided for and once for nothing. I live an amazing life. I write that out every single day. That's how I'm able to regurgitate it like that because I've written it so many times. Then I write my 7 affirmations, whatever those affirmations are that I'm doing at the time, 3 things that I'm grateful for, and 3 accomplishments from the previous day. But I write down in my goals about me being on TV and writers and directors seeking me out and all types of stuff like that. And guess what? I'm starting to get calls from people that have seen my work, seeking me out for roles, telling me about ideas. I got one girl that called me for a play who's seen me in several plays. She's like, I'm putting up my first play. I want to run the script by you, and there's a part in here for you. I said, when are auditions? She said, you don't have to audition. If you like the play and you like the cast, you automatically get the role. But what did I say? Writers and directors seek me out for major roles. And it's happening. What you think about, you bring about. Rub that G, that lamp, as you wish. That's all it is. I don't know if you all will know all of these people, This is Karen Molina White. I was in a film with her called Jump In. She there's a popular movie called Lean On Me. She was a little girl in Lean On Me. She used to be on The Cosby Show. She was on another television show called Malcolm and Eddie. This is Aunt Viv from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Right there, yes, Aunt Viv. That's Clifton Powell, another actor. Here's Tom Sizemore. He was in Heat. He was in Godfather. I did a film with him called The Saints of Mount Christopher. I'm 41 now. I was 36 at the time when we shot this film, playing an 18-year-old high school senior at 36 years old. Dye and a shave, right? I mean, I still look like a kid. If I didn't have gray hair, nobody would know the difference. When I dye my hair, even when I dye my beard, I look so much younger. I started graying at 14, though, so I've always had gray hair. My book, you know, 31 Amazing Life Lessons of Joshua, I hit bestseller rankings on Amazon. And it wasn't my intention. I was just trying to get these voices out of my head, right? So how my book came about, a friend of mine called me and she read me a quote. And I was like, who wrote that? You know, she said, do you know who did it? I was like, no, where did you get that quote from? And I'm naming all these people, Russ Whitney, Frank McKinney, Zig Ziglar, you know, Tony Robbins. She was like, no, you said it. I was like, when did I say that? That's pretty profound. That's crazy. She was like, you got all these little quotes, all these little melisms. You should put them in a book. And I started writing a quote book, but it was extremely boring. And then I started interviewing people that I thought lived up to the quotes. But then it was like, all right, I'm going to have to pay these people royalties. But then I reread The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clason. And I was like, oh, that's it. Put all of this stuff in a story. So I created a story about a guy named Joshua Stokes. You want to tell him about the book?
I was almost late today because I started reading my 10 pages this morning, which turned into 6 chapters.
It's a very fun read. It's an easy read. So Joshua Stokes is this businessman, philanthropist, family man. He walks into a bank one day. The bank is getting robbed while he's there. He saves a pregnant woman's life in the process, but he gets shot and ends up in a coma and has a visitation from an angel who walks him through 31 days of his life where he learned all of the principles that have helped make him the person that he is, the successful person that he is. So there's stuff about family, or stuff about spirituality, or stuff about, you know, success principles, business principles, just, you know, overall. I don't claim to be the richest person in the world, far from it. I believe I'm one of the happiest people in the world, though. You know, a young lady, and I don't see her here today, she came to the picnic yesterday, and I was propped up with my ankle and ice bags on my ankle, and she was like, how are you? And I was like, I'm amazing. And she was like, you don't look like it. I was like, why don't I? She was like, if I was up and I had ice, you know, that means that I'm hurt or something. I said, it's a state of mind. I'm amazed. I'm great. You know, I'm loving life. I'm having fun. I'm here with my friends. Like, what else do? What else could I want? You know, and it's because I believe in all of these philosophies that help shape who I am and my character and my belief and, you know, all this other stuff. So, you know, I think it's a good book. It's definitely a fun read. And the reason that I did it in 31 days is so that a person could read a lesson a day and get through it in a month, if they're not a reader. But he's 6 chapters in. Yeah. Yeah, it pops out pretty easy. It pops out pretty easy. I'll tell you. Yeah, and if you do get it and if you do read it, if you would do me a favor and write an honest review on Amazon. An honest review. Because some people say, oh, I didn't care for it too much. Okay, put that on Amazon. I don't care. Like, only stuff penetrates you if you allow it to penetrate you. Everybody's not going to like everything that you say or do. Okay? It's so crazy. We had a bus. We were going to a convention in Washington, D.C. Mr. Sales team had a convention. I'm not even on Mr. Sales team, but I was going to Washington, D.C. So we had a bus from Chicago to D.C. And I fell asleep on the bus. And the guy took a picture of me sleeping. I guess I had my mouth open. I'm like, ah. Right? And so when I woke up, he was like, ah, I got a picture of you. You were asleep. I was like, we all sleep at some point. Right? And he was like, yeah, your mouth was open. I said, great. Put it on Facebook and tag me. He was like, what? I said, put it on Facebook and tag me. Took the wind out of his sails completely. I was like, we all sleep. At one point in time, we probably all had our mouth open. I don't care about that stuff. I'm not embarrassed that I slept. What kind of sense does that make?
You know what I mean? So stop letting stuff affect you that doesn't matter. Because in the end, we all die anyway. You know, at the end of this story, they all end the same. Right? I was watching an episode of The Chi, because I'm trying to catch up before my episode, because I didn't finish season one. And there was this part where this older guy was talking to this younger guy, and the younger guy was apologizing for something he didn't do. And the older guy said, "Nobody's going to care about that." He said, "On your grave, all that's going to matter is how long you lived and were you a good parent. That's all they're going to talk about. How long did you live and were you a good parent? You know, so don't even worry about it." I was like, wow, that's pretty profound. Okay? Now, in closing, one of the things that I want to talk to you about, because it's great. We've had some good information today. You know, we learned a lot. We had some personal growth, personal development. Hopefully your mindset is that of now being in activity. It doesn't matter that I've given you all of this information if you do not act. Procrastination is the thief of all profit. Procrastination is the thief of all profit. You got to get your stuff done. And you have to be consistent at the stuff that you do. I didn't say, well, I'm in Utah, so I can't make exposures because I'm in Utah. No, I made exposures while I'm in Utah. I can't say, well, team, I'm in Utah. I can't do three-way calls. Well, I couldn't in the mountains because we didn't have cell signal. But when we got out of the mountains, if somebody needed a three-way, I would have done the three-way call. Right? You've got to be consistent in the stuff that you do. If you go to the gym one day, you're sore. That's all you get. But if you go to the gym 10 days in a row, 30 days, well, not in a row, you know, you take your breaks, but you develop a consistent pattern, you start sculpting, your clothes start fitting you different, the cleaners unshrinks your suits, all of these things start to happen. But it only happens if you don't procrastinate. Procrastination is the thief of all profit. Let me show you something. And I didn't mute myself because I'm going to let Jason turn me down. No. Go back. This is a great video. What? All of the other videos showed. This sucks. Does this have Wi-Fi on it? Yeah, the video's procrastinating. Does this have Wi-Fi on it? This is like the best video ever. Not really, but it's pretty cool. Bit O' Honey, anyone? Right. Anybody else? I like you. In the back? No? There's a couple. Sorry. Don't sue me. You'll shoot your eye out, Ralphie. Anybody else? Anybody else? There's a couple. Here you go. All right, I'm out. You're welcome. You got Wi-Fi yet? Almost. This is the last video, and I'm done. I am done. Did you all get some good value today? I know I'm a different trainer. You know, sometimes I'm like, at some point, people are going to stop asking me to go places because I'm going to come back. Church ball. You say what? Majorville. Yeah, I got to see Hobbitville. Hobbitville. Paintball. Y'all got a good paintball here? YouTube. I have to bring my gear. Procrastination.
All right. Can we go live? All right. Here we go. Procrastination.
This morning I got up and got ready quickly because I had to get a lot of stuff done. I sat down at my desk to start getting my stuff done and I spilled my coffee, so I got a sponge to clean it up and I figured I'd take an extra minute to clean the whole desk because a clean desk would help me get my stuff done. When I was finished, I realized I hadn't eaten anything and I didn't want to be hungry while I got my stuff done, so I went into the kitchen and I was out of cereal. When I got to the grocery store, I remembered a bunch of other crap I needed to get, and I figured I was already there, so I did my shopping for the week so I didn't have to worry about it while I got my stuff done. When I got home, I didn't feel like cereal anymore, and so I made an omelet and I did the dishes so I wouldn't have to do them after I got my stuff done, and then I went out to get some oil from the hardware store because my desk chair is kind of squeaky and I didn't want to be distracted by a squeaky chair while I got my stuff done. When I got back, it was getting kind of late, and I knew I wouldn't be able to get my stuff done today, so I started watching the Twilight Zone marathon on TV. I just have to make sure I get to bed early because I want to be well rested tomorrow so I can get my stuff done.
I muted myself, sorry. Don't be the person that doesn't get their stuff done. Right? So, be in action. Like, the best gift that you all could give me, Utah and Idaho. Did anybody come from Idaho? Utah and Idaho. Thank you. Anybody from anywhere else? Okay. The best gift that you all could give me is to be in action. The best gift that you could give yourself is to be in action. Like, I get it. You know, we all need motivation. Hopefully I was able to give you some of that. That's cool. Okay? But how far are you going to take this motivation? So if I make it a tradition to come back here every September, right, and I'm your September Super Saturday speaker. Actually, I prefer August or October. October. All right. September is usually a convention month, and I don't want to come. I mean, I guess I could come during convention month, but whatever. So next year, I come here a year from now. Like, we should have twice the amount of front tables for executives and leaders, right? We should be able to fit in this room next year. If you all honestly take what I gave you today and apply it and choose to change your life. And change your destiny. If you don't, it's up to you. I mean, there's nothing I can do. The sad part is, I'll come back next year and some of you all won't even be in the business. And everybody's like, not me. Okay, prove it. Prove it. There are very few people that are, trying to think. The first time I hit executive director, if any of those people are still working with me. Some of them are. Very few. It happens. But you get to determine what happens. You have such a say-so. You all are amazing people. I didn't even go through some of the exercises I normally go through about your thinking. One of them is on the goal-setting CD, though, but There's so much power that you have inside of you. Like, everybody in here has different fingerprints. There are no two fingerprints. In the history of mankind, there have been no two fingerprints that are exactly alike, ever in life. Snowflakes are even different. We get millions of those, billions of those. If God thought enough to create each individual snowflake differently, think about what he put into you. You can have the desires of your heart as long as they're noble and just and moral and, you know, stuff like that. But you can have them if you're willing to do it, if you're willing to keep your hand to the plow. It's not easy, but it's worth it. Like, being successful is hard. Being broke is hard. Pick your heart. You know, I want to be able, when I go to the airport today, not worry about how much is it going to cost for me to eat. I just want to pick whatever I'm going to eat and eat it. You know, I want to be able to, oh my God, I got to wait until it's a matinee movie. You know, no, I want to just use my member perks and go whenever I want to go. Right? You know, I want to be able to just do the stuff I want to do. And even more so, I want that for you. I was listening to a Jim Rohn tape years ago, and one of the things that he said is, it's an amazing feeling for somebody else to include you in their story. To say, Mr. Rohn, you gave me something that changed my life, that made me do this, that inspired me to do that. And I didn't know what he was talking about, and I didn't understand it until it started happening to me. Success isn't just doing it for yourself. It's doing it for others. And the more people that I can give what limited knowledge I have, because I don't claim to know everything. My grandmother used to say, boy, what you know wouldn't fill up a whole room, right? I don't know everything. I never claim to know everything. But the little bit that I do know, I honestly believe that it's helpful and that people can do something with it and change their lives if they choose to do the work. Because remember what we said earlier, it's one thing to know, it's another thing to apply activity or action to what you know. So my prayer for you, Utah, my hopes, my dreams for you, is that a year from now, when I come back, you all are in a far better place than you are right now, and your lives look totally different for the better. Your cars are upgraded. Your wardrobe is upgraded. Your homes are upgraded. You know, everything about your life is better because you chose to take action. I love each and every one of you, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. Thank you so much for giving me your time.
All right. Well, we will definitely give you the gifts that you've asked for, those of us that are serious about building their business. But we've got some other gifts we'd want to give you as well, if you're okay with that.
Okay.
So if you'd stay here for just a second.
All right.
Just a couple small tokens of appreciation from the state of Utah. First of all, a little thank you card. A lot of leaders have already signed that, put a little nice little note in there for you.
If you didn't get a chance to, it'll be at the back table.
Yep, if you didn't get a chance, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to sign the card for Mr. Roberson, then definitely do that. I have one gift that we ordered, and it has not arrived yet.
Okay.
I will have to bring it to Nashville.
I'll be there.
So
I'll be there.
It's kind of nice when you've got the connection, you know, with Mr. Branch. You know, I was able to put a call into him and say, hey, what are some of the things that Roberson
Now I'm afraid
enjoys.
Of what that gift is. Y'all don't understand. Me and Mr. Branch prank each other often.
Well, he said that, you know, like myself and like Mr. Branch, you enjoy your comic books.
Okay. Well,
he says you like your comic books high in iron.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
We have a shirt coming for you.
Okay.
That is high in Iron Fist.
Nice.
So we have an Iron Fist T-shirt coming
for
you.
Thank you.
And when Mr. Branch was here in town a few years ago, we went and saw the Deadpool movie together. And, you know, got to know some of his flavor for comic books. I got him this really cool little Deadpool lapel pin that he wears now at every convention.
Right.
And so he said, you know, because of your high iron diet, you know, you might like a lapel pin as well. However, given the events of yesterday, this lapel pin really has some additional meaning now. Because
I'm immortal.
Well, this one's not immortal.
It's invincible.
This one's invincible.
Okay. Okay.
Iron Man.
All right.
So there's your
thank
Iron
you,
Man
you.
Lapel pin.
Right. Put this on right now. I got a lapel.
Yeah, so some additional meaning behind that one
yeah.
at this point. Now, this one you can't open here in front of the room.
Okay.
Those that were here last month heard the story of what's in this box. The rest of you are just going to have to become executive directors and start traveling and doing Super Saturdays to learn what's in this box.
All right. Can I open it on the plane?
You can open it on the plane.
Okay.
This is the gift that keeps on giving.
Okay.
No, I can tell you what's in the box. It's a Legal Shield pen and notepad.
Okay.
But there's a very specific story behind this, which is written inside the front cover.
All right. I'll read it on the plane because I might cry.
Well, you have to read it. You have to follow the instructions specifically.
Okay.
And then...
Now I'm scared.
It's a great story, and this gift has traveled distance already.
Okay.
And we want it to travel more distance, so its next stop is Chicago.
Okay.
And if you need additional detail, get a hold of Mr. Hall, and he will he'll fill in some of the blanks on that.
Cool. Will you do this so I don't stick myself?
I can do that. Can't guarantee I'm not going to stick myself.
You
but,
can stick
you know.
Yourself. You're going to stick me.
Yeah, and I just stuck myself already, so that's not cool. All right. Iron Man.
Oh, thank you.
The Church Ball Iron Man.
And if anybody has books that I have yet to sign, I'll just go sit in the back and sign books for a little while. I know we usually do an event after the event. My flight is at 4, so you guys still hang out, fellowship, and get to know each other. It's just that I have to be on a plane by 3:30 to get home by 4, and I have to limp through the airport, so I don't have a whole lot of time to sit and eat. But I'll hang out here for as long as possible, and you know, we can chat around here if you want.
Yep. So one more quick point of business, and we'll get Mr. Roberson to the airport. But one more hand.
Thank you. Get your Steve Hoisington tickets, too.
Yes,
please.
We're going to talk about that right now. So, since Mr. Roberson already let the cat out of the bag, I had this really big presentation planned to promote for the Super Saturday next month. But,
do it anyway.
Do it anyway. So, Mr. Roberson, here's your traveling companion.
Thank you.
I loved some of the information that Mr. Roberson gave there, some of the philosophy and mindset, because, you know, my mindset when I got started, I came to my first Super Saturday, and I was excited when I left out of that event, because I got some amazing training from an amazing millionaire in the world of Legal Shield, and then they talked about buying Super Saturday tickets on the way out. Honestly, my mind, I wasn't sure if I was entirely committed to the business at that point, when I look back at it today, because I was trying to decide if I was going to get a ticket for the next Super Saturday before I left there. Thankfully, I made the choice to buy my Super Saturday ticket. I mentioned earlier, you know, I was kind of broke when I started Legal Shield, so a $25 Super Saturday ticket was a big financial decision for me. I'm so glad that I made the decision to get that ticket and be at the next Super Saturday. Well, as things progressed, I went to the next Super Saturday alone, no guest with me, and it came time to think about the next Super Saturday again. And they said it was $25 for one ticket. So I had to psych myself up again. I had to mentally commit myself to the next Super Saturday. I went out, I bought my one $25 ticket. And that philosophy got me to the next Super Saturday and kept me engaged in the business. But again, I came back with no guest, no new associates on my team. And thankfully, I at least committed to that, because as I went through the business, eventually I went to that convention and I gained some new philosophies. And I came back to that event. It was about the time that Mr. Dave Hall took over as network vice president here in the state of Utah. And I was trying to figure out why I wasn't getting the traction that I wanted in the business. And it's because some of my philosophies just weren't in place yet as far as what to do to really build from event to event and how to build from event to event. And Mr. Hall, at that next Super Saturday, started talking about a promotion he was going to run where instead of, you know, getting one ticket for $25, you could actually get five tickets at that event for $80. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's so hard to come up with $25 for a ticket. You know, now we're thinking about $80. But I'm like, I'm getting $125 worth of tickets for $80. I mean, if I went out there and I had my ticket for the next Super Saturday, if I just found one person between now and then that signed up and became an associate on my team, I would at least make the money back on those Super Saturday tickets with that one membership. I'm like, that's what I want to do. And remember how Mr. Roberson said, you know, was talking about, you know, rubbing that bottle and your wish is my command? Well, guess what the universe said to me that month? Your wish is my command. And I recruited one person, and because the universe said, well, we'll just give you your money back then on those tickets. But I'm like, holy crap, you know, I learned some of those philosophies along the way. I'm like, what if my philosophy changed and I said, I'm going to get those five tickets, but I'm now going to come back with four new associates with me using those tickets the next month. And when I changed my thought and I changed my philosophy, guess what the universe said that month? Your wish is my command. And it was amazing because now I came back with four new associates. I spent the $80, but all of those tickets were now utilized. I'm like, what if I did that again the next month? So I went out there on faith, and I bought my five tickets for $80. So I had my ticket already. I was guaranteed I was going to be at the Super Saturday. But the next month, guess what happened? Four new associates with me over those next 4 weeks that all came back. But they started bringing guests. All those associates started bringing guests. And the team started to grow. And other people started getting their Super Saturday tickets, not just getting one and hoping to come back themselves the next month, but they came back with two, three, four new associates on their team. And all of a sudden that investment made more and more sense, and people were doing it just out of faith and out of repetition and seeing what had happened for other people. And I'm so grateful for Mr. Hall for making that offer to me in the very beginning and to the rest of the associates in the room, because if I hadn't gone out on faith and bought those extra Super Saturday tickets and committed to be there myself, then the team wouldn't have been there, and they wouldn't have continued to be there, and wouldn't have branched across the country. And I'm so happy that Mr. Hall even has sweetened the pot even more today, because we do have a person like Mr. Steve Hoisington coming in next month. Mr. Ellison, you know Mr. Hoisington quite well. If you could sum it up really quickly, why people should get their Super Saturday tickets and be here for Mr. Hoisington on October 13th, what would you say?
Mr. Hoisington is my upline, but he's also turned into my best friend in life, not just in business. Steve is a phenomenal, personally developed human being, but he does this business so simply. He is I call him a robot. He's like a cyborg of all cyborgs. He just makes sure his stuff is done each day. He does not do procrastination. He gets the stuff done, and he gets all the simple stuff done and the hard stuff in a day. And he'll teach you such a simple system, how he's always done this business, and he lives a lifestyle that, trust me, you all want. And he can share that with you. You just have to go out and do it, of course. But it's a simple system that he started from, you know, Dave Cibola himself 16 years ago. So he can transfer that to you if you show up and show up with guests.
Terrific. Well, I've seen people already filtering out to get Super Saturday tickets, so I'm just going to wrap it up right now. Next month, Mr. Hoisington, if you want to get your tickets today, today only, special ticket pricing, even better than we used to get back in the day. If you want to buy one ticket for $20, great. Commit to be here next month with Mr. Hoisington. If you want to have one ticket to bring somebody back with you next month, you can get two for $30, or you can get five tickets for a better deal than we got back in the day. Five for $60 today only. You know, if you want to explode your business, get those extra tickets and bring new associates. You're going to go out and sell and recruit the next few weeks anyway. have a ticket to give to somebody so they can bring back with their guests. On the 13th of October, Mr. Hoisington will be here. We're going to have a lot of fun. Halloween month, you never know what we're going to have. You know, maybe a Halloween-themed slide deck or something else. Have a little fun in the month of October. But Mr. Hoisington, I've met him a couple times at conventions, had some brief conversations with him. Super cool guy. Can't wait to get to know him on a more personal level when he's here in Utah. And let's show him some Utah love and have a lot of guests in the room at those events. So with that being said, thank you all for being here today. Give yourselves a hand. Give Mr. Roberson one more handshake and one more kind word on your way out, and we'll see you next weekend in Nashville in a Super Saturday next month.